RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Up till October 2022, Kathy White was a regional councillor in Waikato and joint committee representative of the Lake Taupō Protection Project and chair of the Environment and Services Performance Committee. And she created a presentation on 1080, The Unintended Consequences for Water, Wildlife and Us. Kathy has a zoologist father and mother, which got her into animal welfare at an early age. She says seeing an animal die of 1080 poisoning is not something you'll ever forget. Kathy is with us now on RCR. Kathy, welcome to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much, Paul. I'm pleased to be here.
Okay, I'm going to start with this because it was in the title of the presentation. The Unintended Consequences for Water, Wildlife and Us Regarding 1080. Are they unintended consequences, I'm wondering? Because don't we know enough now to even just question the wisdom, I'm trying to think of the word, of dropping this poison in our bush? Surely some of the consequences can be anticipated now.
Oh, yes, I do think that all of those consequences can be anticipated. They already know the amount of harm that they do. It's just that they seem to be obsessed with this method of controlling, management of pests in New Zealand. But of course, we've gone one step further now, and they're determined to make us predator free. So they're now looking for the last rat, the last possum, and so that means that in various places they are actually using much higher toxic loadings than they ever have before. So there's even more danger to us and to the environment, Paul.
Yeah, how do you think people become that obsessed with something when there are obvious danger signs everywhere? I've always sort of wondered about that. Any ideas?
I don't know. I don't know exactly why we've become so obsessed with it. I think one of the difficulties is that in New Zealand, you know, we're quite a remote place, and we've become obsessed with keeping things pure and natural, which I find a little bit strange, seeing, you know, we're dropping, a huge amount of toxin into our environment. I mean, New Zealand actually uses approximately 85% of the world supply of 1080. So it's not exactly a pure and natural thing to me. And so, you know, I think that one of the difficulties is that we do have this obsession with being against things that are introduced, and we feel that everything that's introduced is bad. Well, I think that there's a real danger in that. There are a lot of things that have been introduced which have actually had quite positive consequences for us. And when you are looking at something like toxins, you need to be really careful, because you should be looking at a whole ecosystem. You should be looking at what impacts, taking out particular species, what impacts that has on the rest of the ecosystem. And we don't seem to be doing that.
Did you say, what was the percentage of use for us of 1080? What did you just say? 80% of the world's 1080 we use?
So New Zealand uses 85% of the world supply of 1080.
85? It was more than I thought. Okay.
Yeah. And so a lot of countries have decided that the risks with 1080 are too great for mammals and birds. And so they've either banned it completely or they've severely restricted it. So, for instance, the United States recognized that back in the 1970s. And they basically they have banned it, apart from one very small use, which is in states where sheep are predated by coyotes. The sheep have collars with a very small amount of 1080 in them, so that if a coyote attacks them and attacks around the neck area, the coyote will be killed. So their attempt is to get rid of coyotes that have developed a taste for sheep. But basically, once that happens, they send in a HAZ team, basically a team of people dressed up in suits that protect them from the toxin. So they obviously realise what a dangerous toxin it is. But in a lot of states in America, it's banned completely. So it's only reserved for one special purpose. And yeah, and the rest of the time, they don't want it to kill a whole load of unintended animals, unintended wildlife.
Okay, so here, I remember interviewing someone not too long ago. We were talking about the number, I guess the volume of introduced species harming our wildlife, our indigenous wildlife. And I was surprised to hear that out in the bush, it works out to about one possum per square kilometre, which had me thinking, that doesn't sound like many. So I guess what I'm getting to is the impression that has been created is our bush is loaded with introduced species, and they're crowding out and predating on a lot of the indigenous species and threaten them with, you know, even extinction. So has that been overblown, that picture of you know, infestation in the bush?
Yeah, I think it has been overblown. I think one of the problems, because we're focused on getting rid of every last possum and rat, that basically we have become, we've become completely focused on doing that, regardless of what the consequences might be to other untargeted animals. And so the risk with all of these things, when you use a broad spectrum toxin like 1080, which is known to be, it's known to kill everything from invertebrates all the way through to elephants if we had them. So anything that breathes air, it will kill. So in fact, you know, way back in DSIR days, you know, they did a report on exactly how many invertebrates it killed. And it's incredible how many invertebrates it killed, but it was patented as an insecticide to start with. So I guess what you really need to focus on is if it's killing lots of invertebrates, which are the food for birds, and birds actually eat these things as well, and you spread these baits from a helicopter, which means that you have no control over what eats it, then basically you aren't using a targeted method of pest control at all. So when they say that, you know, they're trying to get rid of possums and rats because there are so many of them, in actual fact, you don't have so many in the environment now that it's actually affecting the native species to any great extent. What you're doing is creating imbalance in the ecosystem, which makes it worse. So the risk that you have with all of these things is if you give a benefit to, for instance, a rat, which is a much faster breeding animal than some of these birds, you create the potential for a lot of harm. I think the thing that we really need to focus on is, you know, with something like 1080 or Bredificum. So, for instance, if we look at something specific that's being considered at the moment, which is a poison drop on Rakiura on Stewart Island, which is 175,000 hectares. This is a place which has an estimated 20,000 kiwi. It's actually got a whole range of biodiversity. You've got so many aquatic animals, so many different types of animals on the island, lots and lots of different types of birds. You don't have any stoats. And in a place like Stewart Island, that's actually really important because stoats, you know, can be a dangerous predator, but they don't have any. And so you have to ask yourself, in a place like that, why would you drop a whole load of toxin when the environment is really vibrant already? And you can tell that when you land and you stay in one of the little B&Bs or whatever they've got there on the island. You can actually tell just by listening to the bird life that it's a really healthy environment. So what I would say is, in a situation like that, where there are no stoats or ferrets, all that they would be targeting with their aerial toxins would be hedgehogs, possums, rats, and feral cats. And when they've done their research there, they've discovered actually that the main diet of the feral cats is rats. Okay. So when you've only got those kinds of predators, why wouldn't you just focus on managing or controlling it rather than creating carnage with aerial toxins that will hit everything?
This is something we've heard before as well, discussing 1080, anecdotal, I get that, but quite a few times, and that is in areas where there haven't been drops, the wildlife is going off. It's doing great, yet in areas where there has been a drop, it's quiet. That's what we've heard.
Yeah, so this is interesting. When I was a councillor, Waikato Regional Councillor for Taupo Rotorua, we actually went on a bus trip with the other councillors, and we were taken to an area of Puriora Forest. And we were taken to an area and we were told that this was an area which had been aerially poisoned. The bird life sounded amazing. I looked at it and thought there was something a little bit odd about it. So I actually went back there with Clyde Graff a few days later to have a really good look around.
Yep.
And so what interested me...
They are the Graff brothers. So, yep.
Yes. So the Graff boys, we actually video recorded this this whole experience. So you can look at it online on YouTube on the Graff boys channel, and it's called Councillors Led Down Garden Path. So what we discovered when we went there was that there were a whole load of signs in this particular area which showed that ground control was being done. We found lots of trap lines. We also later did an Official Information Act request to find out whether they had aerially poisoned it. They said in their records it showed that that it hadn't been poisoned for the last 9 years. They didn't know whether it had been poisoned before that. And so anyway, this particular area, which was so good for birds, certainly we had been led astray by being told that this was what could be achieved by aerial toxins. And so in the same video, we drove around the corner further into Puriora Forest to an area which we knew had been poisoned, and we knew it had been poisoned recently. And so we went in to record what the life sounded like. And when you went in, you couldn't hear a single thing, Paul. You couldn't hear an insect. You couldn't hear a bird. And we recorded all of that. And so we put, so in the same video, you've got the area which hadn't been poisoned and the area that had been within a very short period of time. Now, over time, you know, when you open up a food source like that, you kill off, you know, so many things in there, you will have animals come back to it over time. And you will have birds come into the area because you've kind of opened up a food source. So over time, you will get bird life coming back in. And people who go in there might think, oh, this, you know, this sounds like it's okay. But what you really need to do is have a look at what kind of biodiversity you've got in that area. What birds have you killed off? You know, what invertebrates did you harm in that area? You know, you might end up, for instance, with a whole load of birds that are nectar feeders coming back because they're less impacted by 1080. But you end up with a whole load of birds that simply don't exist in that area anymore. So, you know, kiwi used to be regularly heard in Puriora, regularly seen in Puriora. You don't see them now.
And that's because of 1080, right?
Well, I assume so. But
What else is out there?
That's right. I mean, in that area, you know, down the western side of Lake Taupo there, we used to have farmers reporting kiwi in their vegetable gardens. You don't get that anymore. Yeah, there is a whole load of life that is killed off. And another area just wanted to mention, you were talking about areas which haven't had drops. So, for instance, in the Okahu Valley, which is in the Whirinaki, so that's adjacent to Te Uruwera National Park, this is the Okahu Valley has never been poisoned with 1080. And if you drive that road, you know, and you stay overnight in a hut or in a tent, you hear the kiwi at night and it's absolutely fabulous. Now, what amazes me about that area, I mean, partly it hasn't been poisoned because Tūhoe have in the past been very reluctant to allow 1080 to be used in that area. But it's been an area that's had a lot of things happening there. You know, you've had things like, you know, clear felling going on of trees in there. You've got a lot of pig hunters in there. There are a lot of things that potentially could be harmful to kiwi. But in fact, the kiwi are thriving there. And what amazes me even more is that the Department of Conservation takes kiwi eggs and chicks out of that area and they take them to poisoned places They never return any. So this is what really bothers me, because they take the kiwi out of there, which skews the statistics for this unpoisoned area, and they never return any. And actually, when we spoke to a few people a few Tuhoi elders there. They were really angry to find that out. At the time, they weren't aware that the kiwi eggs and chicks were being removed from their area. But you also have to ask yourself, why would you do that in an area where the kiwi are thriving? And again, that's, you know, coming back to a place like Stewart Island, they have one of the best kiwi populations in the country, and they haven't had a massive aerial poisoning on Stewart Island. So you have to say to yourself, why would you poison an area which doesn't have any stoats and which has this amazing population of kiwi? Why would you risk that? You know, they've got, when you look at what animals they've got there, they've got everything from Hooker's sea lion, they've got yellow-eyed penguin, Fiordland-crested penguin. They've also got, you know, they've got dofferals there, and oh my God, dofferals, we know dofferals are killed when you aerially spread toxins, because not only do they eat the baits, but they also eat the poison sandhoppers, which take the baits under the sand and store them as food. So they have this at-risk population of dofferals on Stewart Island, and they're going to be dropping poison to the water. They've said they don't want to leave a single gap on the island anywhere. And what they're proposing, Paul, okay, so this is much bigger toxic loading than an ordinary 1080 drop. What they're saying is they're going, this is a zero invasive predators or ZIP operation. So basically what they do is they do a double pre-feed, and a double pre-feed is to entice every single animal out to eat the food that's being dropped. And these are, you've got to remember, these are cereal baits, they're food. It's basically cereal, sugars, binders, and then after they've done this pre-feed, which doesn't have the toxin in it, and they do it twice to make sure all of the animals get used to eating this lovely food, they then drop a 4 kilogram per hectare load of bait, which is really a high loading of bait. And then 4 weeks later, they drop another load of bait. So this is 3 times the amount. That's a normal poison drop. And then just to add insult to injury, they also do what they call a mop-up of survivors. So this is something where they don't even have a maximum amount of toxin that they can use. Basically, they put these cameras out in this buffer area to see what animals are still there. So they're looking for the possums and the rats, etc. And then they go in and use whatever toxin they like to kill them. So it's an unspecified amount of toxin being used there. And this is planned over 5 years. They're breaking up the island into 5 blocks, and they're starting in the block furthest away from where everyone lives, right? And from my perspective, this is deliberate. This is so no one sees the carnage. Nobody can witness what's happening on that block furthest away from where all the residents live in Oban. And basically they're going to do 1 block a year, but with some overlap. So that means that over a 5-year period, their whole way of life is completely disrupted. And when I say a whole way of life, what I mean by that is you've got, you know, basically Stewart Island is known all around the world for the walks that they've got there. People come to hunt the white-tailed deer and the red deer. People come to fish. They've got the most incredible aquatic life there. You've got everything from blue cod, crayfish, mussels. You've got everything imaginable down there. And you've got butterfish, mohi, parwa, all kinds of things. People are going to be restricted on what they can harvest there because they're also going to be using bradypicum. Now, bradypicum, from a food safety perspective, you're not supposed to harvest and sell anything where you've used bradypicum for 3 years. Bradypicum is a rat poison. Mm. And they already know that some of the aquatic species also consume rats. So you're going to be putting at risk not only your terrestrial life, but you're also going to be putting at risk the livelihoods of the people who live on this island. And that's going to be for a very long period of time because they haven't just said this is a 5-year poisoning operation. They've also said this will involve maintenance in perpetuity. And they've also said that the island will need to be quarantined. So the islanders themselves are going to have to manage this quarantining to make sure that they don't have, for instance, mice arriving. The other thing that they're going to have to put up with when they finally get to poisoning the residential area is, in the reports that I've read, where it's talking about what they're going to do, they've said that they anticipate that they will inadvertently kill pets. So that's not pests, that's pets. So domesticated animals that are owned by the people on the island, and I think there are about 380 people on the island, any animals that they have are potentially going to be killed.
This is insane.
I don't know about you, Paul, but if you imagine where you live,
yep.
Just imagine where you live and thinking, you know, for at least 5 years, but because they've said in perpetuity it's going to be for a lot longer, it's going to be forever. Where you live is forever going to be a completely controlled place, but also for that 5 years at least, you're not going to be able to live life the way you used to live it.
On the basis of what I've just heard from you, first of all, this is insane, actually.
Yes, it is. It's insane.
It sounds like the inmates are running the asylum. No question about that. The other thing is, based on that, I'd wind up the entire department.
Well, I don't believe that the Department of Conservation should be doing this kind of thing. I believe that the Department of Conservation should be much more focused in terms of what intervention that they make. I think they should recognise the risks that are involved with all of these things and the amount of bykill, because there's a lot of collateral damage. Every time, I mean, you know, from when I was a councillor, I saw the collateral damage. I mean, I saw the collateral damage on farms, how many livestock were killed, how many domesticated animals were killed, how many complaints we got. And, you know, and sometimes those things were also hidden from us, Paul, I should say that. As a councillor, sometimes those things weren't told to us, and we found those things out by farmers contacting us directly. And so it's really important that people understand that there's this lack of transparency. There's sometimes dishonesty about what kinds of things happen, supposedly unintentionally, but I think there is enough known now that it's not unintentional or unintended. I think they know that these things happen. And I think it's unethical.
Yeah, just as a start, it's unethical. And after that, it ends in a wildlife genocide.
Absolutely.
By the sounds of it.
And the thing is, you know, so this is the thing. I wrote to the Department of Conservation in an Official Information Act request about Stewart Island, and I asked them a bunch of questions. And they've come back and said they're not concerned about the kiwi. So that's what they said in their reply to me. Now, so this is a really important thing to know, because you kind of think that out of all of the poison drops that we've done in New Zealand, that, you know, that we would test things that die, you know, for 1080 residues. You'd think that we would do that.
Yeah.
But what we discovered when we've asked these questions, we discovered from 1998, for 20 years basically, from 1998, they only tested 3 kiwi for poison for 1080 residues. Recently in a zip off.
Three.
So basically they only tested 3 kiwi, and they found 1080 in feces, kiwi feces, so they knew that they were eating it, but they have chosen not to test kiwi. Now, I find it quite incredible, because when I look at places all over the country, you know, place like Pukaha, which is kind of in the Wairarapa area, which is it's an area where they've brought in a lot of kiwi into a sanctuary. But when you look at how many they brought in and monitored, 120 of them, and out of those, 110 of them were either dead or missing, presumed dead, and they never tested a single one of them for toxin. And what you should know about that is that they use a lot of toxins there. They've done aerial 1080 3 years in a row. They use it on the ground. They use bradyficum. They use a whole range of toxins. And they also have 1,100 bait stations. They're all, you know, there's so much toxin there, and yet they don't test the kiwi at all. And I think they do this because they don't want to get the positive results. Now, interestingly, over in Westland recently, where they did a zip operation, so this is where they have the very high toxic loading, they did kill kiwi and they did test them and they found 1080. But this is the first time that I've seen any positive tests, any testing at all of kiwi, actually, and it's been positive. And that should really tell them that kiwi in a place like Stewart Island, where they've got 20,000 of them, could be really at high risk. And I don't know how they're going to protect them from them, because they eat the baits and they also eat the invertebrates. They eat the kauru, which we know get poisoned by 1080. You know, they pull out the giant worms. There's that amazing giant native worm down on Stewart Island. We've got footage of them pulling those worms out. And we also know from the science that's been done that all of those things get poisoned by 1080. So I don't know, Paul, it doesn't make any sense to me. And it also seems to me to be an incredibly unethical thing to do, not only to the wildlife, to the environment there, but also to the people who live there.
Well, I don't want that being done in my name, and it is if I'm a taxpayer, right? So they must know all this. I mean, what you've just been saying indicates that there's knowledge of, well, I won't say unintended consequences, but consequences, yet they still go ahead with it. This can't stand, can it? I mean, well, how do we roll over the top of this one and get it stopped forever?
I really don't know. I really don't know what the answer to that is, because some of the information is out there and nothing seems to be changed. You know, if you look at the West Coast, if you look at Arthur's Pass, if you look at recent poison drops along that west coast, if you look at the Matukituki poison drop the wet jacket poison drop, they killed 50% of the monitored kiwi. And DOC replied to me in an official information act that the deaths of monitored kiwi basically indicates the deaths within the whole population, including the unmonitored ones. So you've got to think to yourself, if we're killing 50% of a kia population every time we do a poison drop, that's a lot to recover from. You know, that's killing off birds that are at reproductive age, and, you know, it's killing off both female, it's killing male, it's killing chicks. So my concern is that we do have some of this information. We don't have it all, because some of it's not released. But we have enough to know that in these zip operations, they cause a lot of damage. They killed 556 black-backed gulls. 556 of them, found them all along.
And they lived to 70 years, by the way.
Really? Now, I didn't know that, so I'm glad you told me something.
I know a bit about seagulls.
But, you know, you look at that and you think, that's just one species. You know, we don't know an awful lot about other species. We don't know about the impacts of these toxins on things like frogs and geckos and skinks and things like that. We don't have a lot of information on that. That came up as a data gap when they assessed 1080 at one stage. Very little known about some of these species. And yet we just, you know, the government just announces that they're going to do a poison drop in an area without having that knowledge. But the thing is, the actual poison factory that manufactures these baits is a state-owned enterprise. It's owned by the government. And that is a huge conflict of interest. I don't know how we actually stop this, because it's kind of like a stone that's rolling down a hill and it just keeps gaining momentum. This whole predator-free thing has become such an obsession with people without them really even thinking, you know, is it a positive thing to have no predators? Because in actual fact, predators help to keep your ecosystem in balance. And lots of places around the world where they've eliminated predators, they've later had to reintroduce them. So what you've got to ask yourself is, not only is this going to be carnage, but is it something that we really want to do to an ecosystem that is one like Stewart Island, which is actually working pretty well? Why would you do it to a place where life is abundant?
Yeah, well, the pattern that emerges here, and we talk a lot about fluoride as well.
Yes.
And there's mountains of evidence to prove now as a fact that it's a neurotoxin. It affects, if it's in the water supply at a certain level, and that's a very low level, it affects the development of young children growing up and can lower their IQ.
Yes.
That's a fact. Yet, you know, regional councils and councils are being threatened and fined heavily if they don't do it, if they don't put fluoride in their water supply. So we're poisoning there.
Yes.
And there's no science behind it. The science that is quoted here is really just a bit of folklore from the 50s, really. That's as far as it can reach in terms of a bar. Same thing here.
Yes.
It's the same pattern.
And it's kind of connected because it's sodium fluoroacetate. There are connections with fluoride. So although I'm not going to go into detail about that because I'm not a scientist who can tell you specifics about that, I do know that it's connected. And so, and with 1080, it's dropped into water. We asked these questions in council and because we knew that it was dropped into water, but we wanted it on record. And they said that in 1080 drops, when you're spreading 1080 from, you know, hoppers underneath helicopters, you have no control over it. So they can't avoid water. But, you know, in some cases, they're actually deliberately spreading across all waterways and down to the edges of the sea because they don't want to leave gaps. They want to hit everything. And so, you know, there is a real risk because it does end up in our water. And when it ends up in our water, it gets taken up by everything. It gets taken up by the mayflies, by the watercress. It gets taken up by the kora. And yes, it might be the case that you can't detect it in the water anymore because the water gets diluted, moves on elsewhere. You know, very difficult to actually pick up the levels of these things in water. But it doesn't mean that those baits weren't there and that they did harm as they passed through. And you've got to think to yourself something like freshwater crayfish. You know, they may not be affected in the same way as something like a mammal. You know, everything gets affected differently. For instance, you know, if you looked at something like a dog, it only takes half a gram of a poison bait, to kill a small dog. So it's a tiny amount that can kill a small dog. But with cold-blooded creatures, we don't know enough about it, but it should be. People should be aware that, for instance, trout can actually eat the baits and they can also eat poisoned mice you can find. So, for instance, some types of trout can have a lot of mice in them, especially during something like a mast year. But they won't necessarily succumb to the toxin themselves straight away. And during that time, they can be caught by someone. And it has a level of toxin in there that could be dangerous to somebody. And, you know, the thing is, people have said, well, you know, is it a lethal dose of the toxin? Well, what about the sublethal doses of the toxin? Because some people have talked about the very small levels of 1080 that can have an effect on somebody who's pregnant. You won't necessarily know it at the time because it doesn't kill you, but it can have effects on you, you know, which are quite serious effects. And, yeah, you simply won't be aware where that came from. You won't know.
Man, it sounds so crazy. We're coming up against time. I mean, it really has to be stopped, doesn't it? It really has
to.
Well, I think
so. It's
unethical.
I think so. But, you know, the things that would have stopped it, Paul, the things that would have stopped it, basically – The government has just stopped any way of us. The example that I'm thinking of is the Cochiman family in Potararu that got poisoned after eating a wild boar curry.
Oh, yes, I remember that story. Yeah.
Okay, so that story is a really interesting one because we followed through with it. We went through all the medical notes. We got a toxicologist to actually examine the medical notes just to find out, you know, whether what we suspected was true. Because what happened to those people from the minute they went into hospital, you know, and they went to, you know, uncontrollable vomiting. When they got into hospital, there were massive convulsions, so bad the convulsions that they had to have multiple people holding them down. The very first working diagnosis on the day they were admitted was that it was most likely to be, in fact, I've got it on my screen here, consumption of meat containing poison used for possum or rodent killing, neurotoxin 1080. So that was their very first, in their very first.
I remember because I was reading news, sorry to jump in, but I was reading news at the time. So I remember that story and I remember the word botulism.
Okay. And so the very first media report that came out mentioned 1080, I think it was, if I go back, wild boar meat may have poisoned New Zealand family. And then the caption said, health authorities said there was no evidence of any broad contamination of game meat. Okay. But the thing is, they did know from the doctors were saying all of the symptoms were looked like 1080 poisoning. But then all of the media reports that came out from then on mentioned botulism, didn't mention 1080 again.
That's right.
And what's weird about that, you see, this is why we got the toxicologist to have a look at all of the medical notes. This is a guy called Professor Ian Shaw from Canterbury University. We got him to look at all of these things to give us his opinion. And basically what he said, okay, I'm just going to actually tell you what he said, because he said, in my opinion, the affected members of the family's symptoms are consistent with 1080 and not botulinum toxin poisoning. And at the end, he said, basically he said they should have, if the 1080 poisoning hypothesis had been followed, early collection of urine for fluoroacetate analysis might have significantly assisted the diagnosis. So basically they didn't test the patient's urine until 18 days after they'd been hospitalised.
Well, that's too late
to get a valid result.
Yeah, of course.
And yet they still said in the paper that they tested for 1080 and it was negative. So it was misleading. It was dishonest. And they never, so they'd been given that they'd been given samples of the curry. They'd also been told that there were still bits of the frozen pork and the people's freezer at home.
Yeah, so there was evidence available.
There was lots of evidence there and they didn't actually follow up on any of it. So even though the doctors were saying we need to test for 1080 poisoning, the DHB made a decision not to.
District
Health Board made a decision not to test for 1080, even though the doctors were saying this is the most likely.
Would that have been a clinical decision or an admin decision, I wonder?
So I don't know all of the details of that, but we did do an Official Information Act request and we were told that they didn't think it was 1080 because they thought that it took too long for the initial symptoms to come on. Well, that wasn't true. It wasn't true. We've looked that up since and we've found the range of time. You know, it can be affected by, for instance, they ate their curry in the evening and then they went to sleep. So, you know, the period of time that they were sleeping, it may have slowed down the onset of the symptoms, but it also will depend on how much you consumed. One of the members of the family only ate a couple of pieces of the curry. So these kinds of things can make a difference. And, you know, the fact that the doctors all the way through the medical notes kept saying 1080, they kept putting it back in the working diagnosis. They obviously felt quite strongly that that was most likely to be it. And the other thing is that we did find out was that the hunter who gave the family the pig, his dog also died on the same day that he caught that pig.
Well, isn't that a bit of a tell?
So I would have thought so. Look, what can I say, Paul? The thing is, they know now what risks there are to people who are consuming things that are out in their forests. And the thing is, in each place, it's different. So what I mean by that is, you know, they talk about how rapidly 1080 breaks down in the environment. But you can't say that with any specificity, because if it's a cold place, if it's a really cold place, it'll take a long time for something to break down. So you can have a carcass out in the environment that's toxic for a long time, and that's a risk for anything that eats it for that period of time. And in fact, in some places, they've even found 1080 still present in bone after more than a year. So, that's quite significant when you think they might only have their signs up saying not to hunt in this area for 4 months. And, you know, places like Stewart Island, it's pretty cold down there. It does get a lot of rain, but it is very cold. And when they're putting that amount of toxin in, it might also be creating quite a sterile environment and killing off a whole load of bacteria, and you know, bacteria and insects obviously help to biodegrade things.
Yeah, totally. The bottom layer, right?
Yeah. So, but you know what? In their brochures that they put out, that the government puts out, it says things like this. Brochures say it's biodegradable, and this is a quote, it leaves no residue in water, soil, plants or animals. Its use is strictly regulated. It presents little risk to humans or the environment.
Hmm. Okay. And they've got no basis for making those claims, of course.
No. No, they don't. And if they'd seen some of the things that I've seen, there's no way that they would say that, I would have thought. So I don't know who's putting these brochures and propaganda together, but they should be made to go to somewhere like Stewart Island after they've done that first 4 kilogram per hectare drop and watch everything that dies.
It's a horror show. Wow, what you've just told us, it's a horror show. I think we probably already had a feeling that it might be, but hearing you laying it out is, well, it makes me angry, actually. Makes me kind of, my blood boils a bit. We seem to really enjoy poisoning ourselves and our environment in this country, which means we're living a lie, aren't we? We just live a lie.
Well, we're living a lie, but we're also living in a pretty toxic place, I have to say.
Yeah, well, that's what comes from dishonesty.
It does.
All right, Kathy, it's been fascinating having you on. I'm sure there'll be a huge reaction from our audience to this, and I'm going to have to just kind of process what you've just said. Really fascinating hearing you here on RCR. And if people are interested in seeing your presentation, 1080, The Unintended Consequences for Water, Wildlife and Us. It's on YouTube, right? So that people can do that search and they can watch it.
It was at the Flora and Fauna Conference. And there, and other, the other place people should look if they want to find videos about 1080, you know, and it's videos which have been done after drops. So it's primary evidence, really, of what happens. They can go to the Graph Boys. And that's on YouTube, and also tv-wild.com. There's quite a lot of evidence about 1080 on there, including the video evidence. And, I would have thought that because, you know, those kinds of things like the documentary Poisoning Paradise, you know, that includes interviews with farmers, you know, one woman who had 152 sheep and lambs killed in one poison operation on her property. And it also shows the letter from the Southland, Southland Regional Council, basically saying, you know, we'll pay you this compensation on condition of confidentiality.
Yeah, of course. Don't say anything is always the way.
So people watching those things, it's really important. Thank you so much for your time, Paul.
Thank you, Kathy. Kathy White, former Waikato Regional Councillor. Thanks for coming on RCR. Thank you.
Thank you.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.